one bit. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you...
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Community Living Show. I'm Michael Rubin, and Kelly is still away, so I get to do the solo thing again this week. Kelly, if you're listening, we need you back, man. No, joking. So today, we're going to play a previously recorded, interview with a friend, Karen McGill. She is a, award-winning author, a fictional writer, and an inspirational speaker on the topic of things that interrupt your life. She was diagnosed with MS, and she actually had to rebuild her life away from being a government worker. It was a job that she actually really liked, but she had to start over again because of having been diagnosed with MS, and she just couldn't get up and do the job anymore. So, tell you what, we're going to just start the interview. So, welcome back to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Networks. And we're here again, this time to do a one-hour interview with Karen McGill. The last time we had her on, she was on the half-hour version, and she talked a little bit about her books and the becoming an inspirational speaker and things like that. But we want to get more into her story and how she actually got started down the path of inspiration and appearing on stage.
Good to see you again, Michael.
Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. June 5th, 2000, I woke and I rolled over to turn off my alarm, and my left arm didn't move. This is really weird. So, okay, something's going on, but like I say, nature was calling. I had to get up. As soon as I put my feet on the ground and put some weight on it, my left leg collapsed. So I crawled from my bedroom to the bathroom. It was a very short distance. And went to the washroom and everything else. When I was brushing my teeth, I noticed that the left side of my face wasn't moving. It was as if somebody had drawn an invisible line down the center of my body. The right side worked, but the left side didn't. I mean, and everyone asked me, weren't you terrified? Weren't you scared? And for some reason, I wasn't that morning. In fact, I went to work. I was a tax collector. I went into work, and then I went to the doctor later. And he sent me over to St. Paul's Hospital because he was right across the street. And I sat there. I was there 7.5 hours. And he was poking and prodding me. And nobody's telling me anything. No suspicions, nothing. So, I mean, then I think I was starting to get scared then. Mm-hmm. But actually, I was hungry. Because once you get into emergency, you're not supposed to eat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's instant nothing by mouth.
Yeah. So 7.5 hours, I was hungry. My mom, I phoned her and told her something was wrong. And she, but she didn't hear from me. She started calling around and found out I was sitting in the emergency at St. Paul's. So she came up. And then my father came also. So he ended up driving me home after the 7.5 hours. A couple of days later, I went to see a neurologist. and he scheduled me for an MRI. 9 days later, the MRI, it was like 7 a.m. Thank God for my father. He drove me. Got me there in time and had the, and then I went home and waited. The neurologist called me in to come into his office. I think it was about 5. And my parents met me there and went in. I should have known because he said, would you like your mother to come in with you? I said, no, fine, you know. I'm a big girl. I can handle this. And I should have known then that it was something serious. And he told me it was a suspicion of multiple sclerosis. That's the way they had to go through my whole medical history. And because one attack, they will not definitely right. say it's multiple sclerosis. But we, my father and I went mentally over my history and realized that I'd had at least one before. I had a skull fracture when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, when I went in September, I went to the MS clinic at UBC. And my MS neurologist thought it was really interesting because he says more people are coming in being diagnosed with MS and they've had head trauma at some time in their life.
Yeah.
So they're wondering if there's a connection.
Hmm.
See, I walked with a cane for about 13 years. I went on disability the end of September, October 1st. And it was tough couple of months there. Because you're trying to get everything organized.
Yeah.
And the way my specialist had written down my diagnosis, EI kept questioning it because he said I was likely never to return to work, and because he didn't put an end date on it, EI just kept wanting
right.
me to reprove I was disabled.
Well, their ultimate goal is to put you back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you try getting some, and I'd have to go through all the motions of calling around and trying to get things done. One time it was 3 days before Christmas. I got a notification that they weren't going to pay me anymore. They were canceling my claim, and try getting something done then.
Oh, mm-hmm. God. Government office.
Yeah.
I imagine that was probably a little disturbing, especially around the holidays. And that's a really stressful time for people to begin with.
Yeah. And stress makes MS worse.
Yeah.
So I was always having all these symptoms, and I'm still new to it.
So, I'm curious about one thing in that day that you wound up at St. Paul's.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a similar experience. I've had Bell palsy 5 times.
Yeah.
And which there were doctors are amazed. It's like,
you can't get it 5 times. Yeah.
Once in the odds of you getting it a second. 5? What? and they've done other bacteria tests to try to prove it was something else. And it was just what it was. But I remember the first time I woke up with it. It's like, and I'm like standing in front of the mirror. I go to brush my teeth, and it's like, I can't feel the toothbrush on this side of my face. Hey, how come this brush my teeth don't want to move? And you're talking about like that.
Yeah,
I'm poking fun at it because I can look back at it now, but it was really stressful. What the heck is going on with my body?
It is. It's kind of. Did you have, like I did, like a delayed reaction? Like you were just curious at the beginning?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, something's not right.
Something's not right. Oh, well, I just slept on the wrong side of the bed or something like that. And the window was open, so I had, chill, whatever, right? And
yeah.
It'll clear itself up in a couple of minutes, right? Just continue with your day and get ready for work, right?
Well, it was funny because that weekend I gone out on a... it was supposed to be a blind date. The guy was a musician. And gone to the club to see him. And my right leg actually started, and it was wobbly, like Gumby legs. That's the only way I can describe it. You know, like the that green Gumby doll?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't know, it was spasming. My leg was spasming. So
how did you move from the denial of something's wrong, because obviously you said you went to work,
yeah,
to landing in the ER?
Well, I had made a doctor's appointment. Because, you know, something is definitely wrong. And people are coming in, like my colleagues at work are coming in and looking at me and going, something is going on, right? And so I made a doctor's appointment. And when I went up there and he poked me and prodded me and said, no, you better go to emergency. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, it's the way, you know, it's the way it goes. I'm glad I did go.
Yeah. I'm glad you went too. Because something more traumatic could have happened.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's not much they could do. Like they said that when they got the diagnosis that the paralysis would probably go away. And it did. The left side of my body was weak for a lot of years. I walked with a cane up until 2013.
Yeah.
And then I got rid of the cane and thought, well, actually what happened was is I went shopping at Safeway. Mm-hmm. It's about a mile and a half from here. And I propped my cane outside against the a post and I was taking pictures of the clouds. Then went into the store and forgot it. When I came out, somebody had taken it. So I thought, okay. Started backtracking in case I left it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, got home, I thought, well, I can walk that far without a cane. I don't need it.
Universe speaking.
Yeah. Did I just say,
Karen,
yeah?
It's time to let it go.
Time to let it go. And that's when I kept a diary.
Yeah.
Through the whole time from the attack.
Did that help you?
It would help me because that's what I did is I took it. And it went and created a book on the right side, my story of survival and success.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all that comes from, is my diary. And the poem at the end is from, I wrote a poem, see, it would have been January 2001. And that's when I first started healing, I think. That's when I started writing again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but keeping the diary is great. It was really emotional going through it, though, when I was writing the book. I had to get up and walk away from the computer because it was just so intense at times.
Yeah.
Remembering, you know, because I felt, especially when I went on disability, I felt like I was a loser and wasn't worth much and all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not true because I'm now getting into the speaking and...
Clearly not a loser.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you wound up on disability...
Mm-hmm.
And how did you transition from that to writing to now you're a speaker?
Well, I've always written, ever since I was a child. My grandmother was a published author. And I had a couple of books that I'd written years ago. Nothing ever happened with them. Mm-hmm. And in 2004, I self-published my first one. The Bond, a Paranormal Love Story. It's a novella, it's short, mm-hmm. but it's actually won an award, though. In 2012, it won an award. It's been looked at by some movie producers. Nobody's picked up on it. So, and then I started, when I moved into this place, they were starting to renovate above me.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 5 years ago. And I went, there's no way I'm going to be able to stay at home with all that going on, because they tore out the carpets and put down tile.
Mm-hmm.
So I started walking and I started my blog, Vancouver Vagabond.
Oh, yeah. you are a successful blogger. That was one of our other connections was blogging. We met it. History between Michael and Karen, for all you guys that are listening out there on either the NCRA networks or on our podcasts. We actually met at Bill.
Time for a station break. You are listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRE networks, and we're broadcasting live from CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's co-op radio.
2014 in Vancouver, and it was at what's the name of the club?
560?
560, yeah.
Yeah, on Seymour.
Oh, Seymour, yes.
Yes.
Here, of course, downtown Vancouver. And I had just missed, Karen's talk when I finally got into the venue, because Bill is great, it's awesome, but sometimes Bill isn't always organized. So I had trouble finding my name, so I had just missed your talk, but I was taking photographs, and I was trying to get snippets for this particular radio show. Something usable to when we were still solely on the co-op radio and not completely on the NCRA networks like we are now. So I was trying to get snippets for that so that we could play stuff from Bill because it's so inspirational.
Oh, it is. I saw Bradley Shind on Global News, and he was mentioning it. And I'd never spoken in front of crowd of people before, but I just had this book published on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get my message out, I've got to get in front of people.
Yes.
And talk to them. I was always been the one that sat in the crowd and heckled, heckled the speakers. But I saw Bradley, and then I tracked down the Bill, and it's all volunteer, and they asked if they needed garbage bags. So fine, I'll bring garbage bags. And I want to speak. I want 10 minutes to speak. And as soon as I hit send, or posted it on this, the Bill wall they had there, I thought I was going to be sick. My God, what did I do? Me, speak in front of people? I can't do it, can't do it. I just, I'm literally shaking, but you can't take it back.
Yeah.
And now I'm in Toastmasters. I speak regularly. And I spoke at Bill this year.
Yes, you did. And we actually aired. So there's going to be a bit of a timeline for those that are listening on the podcast. We actually did air your talk for 2015.
Oh, okay.
We have actually aired that. That tells people a little bit about your story and a little bit of your quest. To inspire people, for them to move past whatever it is they think is a disability and turn around and use it so that they can that same energy into becoming an ability. So
yeah.
So that was one of your core messages. So.
Yeah, that we're stronger than we think.
These
things. Because I find that too many times in our society, it's almost as if they want us to be weak. You drink too much, you're automatically an alcoholic, and it's because you've got some deep, dark secret in your past. You're powerless against it.
Mm-hmm.
Same with drug addicts. I mean, it can't just be that somebody likes the taste of alcohol, or a drug addict tried it one day and got hooked.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, because I think that happens a lot too. But no, it's got to be some deep, dark secret, and you're a victim. That's the word I was trying to think of. We're all trying to make us all victims.
Yeah.
And I don't believe anybody's really a victim.
No. We may have had some tragic things happen that we learn from, but a victim is a state of mind, not
good point. Yeah,
something from a tragedy,
and that's what I'm just trying to help people realize, and mm-hmm. just that, as you said, take the energy that you have about considering yourself disabled, and turn it around and realize what you can do.
Yeah.
Rick Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, when I first became disabled, somebody in my apartment building, I lived in New West at the time, they've been cleaning out another apartment, and they gave me a whole box of books, and one of them was Rick Hansen's, a story about his journey, and it touched me so much, I wrote him, and he wrote me back, and he said, I'm going to paraphrase, because I can't remember the exact wording, basically to focus on what I can do, and don't worry about what I can't. And what I found is that every time you start focusing on what you can do, there's more and more that you can do. It just kind of feeds together. And I sent him an email, a thank you for that, just recently, and told him that, you know, I've got 5 books published now. I'm now into the motivational speaking. And he answered me and told me, he was wowed by what I've done. And to keep in touch and let him know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that I've got him in frames on my wall. You can see him. You can see him later.
Yeah. That'd be really cool.
Yeah. So it meant a lot to me.
Yeah. So he's one of your heroes.
Him and Terry Fox.
Terry Fox. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Terry Fox. It was. Was it 1980 or something? Somewhere in the 1980s when he died, right?
Oh, yeah. I think he was, let's see, 84, I think, is when he did his marathon of hope.
But his message made it all the way down into the U.S.
It made it worldwide,
Yeah. It was like, what a wonderful message it was just to keep going.
Well, you know,
wasn't going to stop.
You know the Terry Fox loonies?
Yeah.
I collect them. And, like, I've given some to friends of mine in other parts of the world. I sent one down to a woman I knew who was a teacher in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked with disadvantaged children. And she said they were just so impressed with his story. Because every time I sent one out, I would include his story in there, right?
Yeah.
For people that weren't familiar or maybe forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said those kids were just so impressed. You know, gave them such hope that this man who had cancer and lost a leg could actually do what he did.
He kept running.
Yeah, he just kept running.
So, yeah, it's an amazing story. In a lot of respects, your story is equally as amazing.
Well, thank you.
You didn't let MS just put you in a chair and take you out of the game. You kept going.
Well, with me, a lot of it is that my father used to say that getting MS was one of the best things that happened to me. And in a way it was. I still think also my job with the government so that I had everything in place, like disability insurance and all that in place before I got sick, was very beneficial. A very good thing to happen to me. But the MS, now I get to stay home and write. And now I get to pursue my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not locked into a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. What is your biggest dream?
Right now, it's to be a speaker on the same level as Anthony Robbins.
See another hero?
Well, I don't know if he's really a hero. I admire what he's done. He's done. You know, but I wouldn't know. I don't know enough about him for him to be a hero.
Yeah.
I just want to achieve that level of success.
Yeah. To be able to fill the big rooms.
Be able to fill the big rooms and do that. And another is, and to get my message out to people. Help people change their life for the better.
That is what the ultimate message is, you know.
It is
to live your life well.
To live your life well and don't let, because I don't think anybody has a perfect life. You can have all the money in the world and you can have, you know, perfect health and everything else, but there's still going to be something not right.
Could we say that it's perfect for you, but not perfect for me?
Yeah.
Because it's your life.
Yeah. But like,
there's some things that you're supposed to do, purposes you're supposed to achieve, right?
Yeah. And I think that every time that you're not, that you don't have a purpose, like something, a goal to go for, mm-hmm. that's, to me, that's a sad life.
Yeah.
I would like, say, to be on the same level of success as Anthony Robbins and to go out there and, I don't want a big fancy house. Though Vancouver, you're going to pay a mint for a house anyways, no matter how big it is.
Yeah, we don't necessarily know. Like, that's an achievement if you actually have
a house
here in Vancouver.
Yeah, you have to have the same level of success as Anthony Robbins to get a house in Vancouver.
Mm.
But I like, a nice house, reasonable house, and then be able to help people financially. Mm. Give to different organizations and
do you work with any specific organizations right now?
No, not right now. Right now, I'm trying to get everything moving so that I can. It's kind of hard to do when you're on disability and all that, and my energy is limited too, so that's the bad part about MS.
Yeah. So how has MS actually affected your energy levels?
Chronic fatigue is one of the main symptoms, and that's what knocks a lot of people out of work.
Yeah.
Because once I start getting overtired, I was saying with like Bill on the Saturday, I, for some stupid reason, I woke up at 2:30 in the morning. and I couldn't get back to sleep. So I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know with Bill, it's a high level of excitement, getting things done, getting things organized. And you always had, something's always forgotten. But that's part of the fun of Bill.
Yeah, because I actually showed up this particular time in 2015 at the, was it in the Imperial Theater?
The Imperial Theater,
yeah.
I mean.
I actually showed up on Sunday. And yes, I am now officially a Bill speaker. I actually got to get my feet wet at this particular one, and I got to,
that's
got
right.
to speak. Yeah.
Sorry, I think I caught part of your speech. I didn't catch it all, though.
Yes, you did get to catch part of it. Unfortunately, while I was able to record you and Dwayne Clausen, one of our other friends, and Jennifer Coe, okay. I was able to get her speech. Mine was just a massive feedback.
Oh,
I didn't get to record my own.
Well, then yeah, you have to make arrangements next year.
Yeah. So yeah. That's okay.
Because, okay, we're running out of time.
Oh,
I want to thank Karen for allowing me to go in her house again to record that interview. But anyway, I do have one quick announcement that the Fibromyalgia Wellspring Group is having a pub night in September. I believe it's September 24th. I will post details on our Facebook page, Community Living Show Facebook page, and I invite you to check that out. And for this particular event and other events and things that we just generally talk about. But again, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and I will see you guys next week. Okay, bye. We're going to leave you with Tiffany DeRosier, "Till I Get Over You."
Tangled in your arms forever, always thought we'd be together. underneath a starlit sky until you left and said goodbye. Now someone else is in your place, but in his eyes I see your face. And even though he holds me safe, the stars have never been the same. Holding on to every memory, can't let go, you're still a part of me. I pretend, but in reality I'm still not over you. To be. I close my eyes, it's all that I can do, till I get over you. Yeah.